Hey there. Thanks for listening to Here and Now Anytime. If you like what you hear, we'd love if you subscribe to or followed the show in your favorite podcast app. Just look for Here and Now Anytime. And if you can leave a rating or review while you're at it, we would really appreciate it. It helps us a lot. And telling your friends about the show helps too. Thanks. Now, here's today's show.
They've been through hell to get where we are today, and now some of their fears are coming back.
As many states pursue anti-LGBTQ bills, how are older members of the community feeling about the future? It's Wednesday, March 22nd, and this is Here and Now Anytime from NPR and WBUR Boston. I'm Kalyani Saxena. Today on the show, we reflect on the past and present of LGBTQ rights in the wake of conservative backlash. But first, let's turn our eyes to the dangerous new fungus spreading through hospitals at an alarming rate. The CDC put out a new report this week warning about a rising number of cases of Candida auris. The fungus is drug-resistant and deadly to those with lower immunity and the elderly in nursing homes. We have so many questions about what this means, so we called up Dr. Megan Lyman. She's chief medical officer in the CDC's Mycotic Diseases Branch and author of this report. She spoke with Deepa Fernandez.
Can you tell us first what this fungus is and how it's making people sick?
Candida auris is a type of yeast, but what makes this species different is that it's often resistant to antifungal medications. It likes to colonize the skin, and patients can shed it into their environment, which makes it easily transmissible in healthcare facilities.
And I was reading that it's even hard for cleaning products to eradicate this. Is that correct?
Right. We have found that there's many common healthcare disinfectants that don't kill it. Candida auris is shed by patients into their environment and can persist on surfaces for a very long time, even up to a month. So part of it is using the right disinfectant, but also it's important to make sure that cleaning's done thoroughly, which can be very difficult.
Now, cases nearly doubled between 2020 and 2021, but the overall numbers remain low, around 1,400 cases in the U.S. Why is the CDC concerned?
We're concerned because this pathogen is extremely resistant. So those who do get infections, those infections can be very difficult to treat. People who are at highest risk are very sick at baseline and require very high acuity care, like patients who are on mechanical ventilation, have invasive medical devices like feeding tubes and catheters and central lines. And most transmission occurs in those healthcare settings.
And what can the most vulnerable patients, the immunocompromised, the elderly, do to protect themselves?
Well, to prevent spread or stop spread, it's important for cases to be identified early and to strengthen infection control practices in healthcare facilities, especially things like good hand washing and hand hygiene, isolation and PPE use, and environmental cleaning, as you mentioned, with an approved disinfectant. So most of our concern is about spread in healthcare settings between patients.
People might be listening, Dr. Lyman, and get a little concerned. Some of the things you're mentioning might bring up for them the coronavirus pandemic and the strain on the hospital systems that may have contributed to the spread of infections. Do you think most people should be worried about this right now?
I think generally most people are low risk for acquiring it themselves, but maybe loved ones who have some of these risk factors could acquire it. And I think in some ways it's a cautionary tale about, you know, what can happen with an emerging pathogen like Candida auris. And we've learned a lot and, you know, managed to improve practices, but I think it demonstrates room for improvement that we have to strengthen practices to prevent spread of C. auris or other resistant bugs or emerging threats.
Dr. Megan Lyman, author of the new CDC report. Dr. Lyman, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Coming up, As conservatives push anti-LGBTQ bills in state legislatures across the country, many older members of the community have advice about how the past and present can influence the future of LGBTQ rights. Deepa spoke with Barbara Satin, an 88-year-old transgender activist, and Kira Johnson, executive director of the National LGBTQ Task Force. That's just ahead.
More than 450 anti-LGBTQ bills have been introduced in state legislatures this year. These are bills that limit access to public facilities, sports, certain medical care, and more. The sheer number of them before lawmakers this year is a record. White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre spoke about the legislation and the right-wing rhetoric around the issue earlier this month at a briefing with reporters.
Look, it started with a speaker at a conservative conference calling for the eradication of transgender people, language that not a single national Republican leader has condemned. In Iowa and Tennessee, Republicans are now calling for legislation to attack gay marriage and protections for same-sex couples. In Florida, just Florida alone, Republicans introduced 20 bills on a single day to roll back the rights of LGBTQ community.
So these attacks come at the same time that the National LGBTQ Task Force is celebrating 50 years of advocating for social justice. We have two guests joining us now to reflect on how the past and present may influence the future of LGBTQ rights. Kira Johnson is Executive Director of the National LGBTQ Task Force. She's in Washington, D.C. Welcome, Kira.
Thank you so much. Glad to be here.
And Barbara Satin is a longtime faith leader with the United Church of Christ and advocate for aging LGBTQ communities. She's an openly transgender woman, and she joins us from Minneapolis. Barbara, welcome.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Barbara, I'd love to start with you. You're now in your 80s. When you hear of all this anti-LGBTQ legislation and rhetoric, the eradication of transgender people, I wonder what you make of where we stand broadly in terms of LGBTQ rights in this country right now in 2023.
Well, I'm really in the class of the glass is half full. I think that we have come a long ways from the days where my peers, the old LGBT community, feared for their lives, just being who they are, to a place where we have, in many states, substantial protections, and many states we don't. But at least it's a better place than we used to be. I'm sad around what this impact is having on the young generation of LGBTQ people, particularly the trans community. But I'm also concerned about how my peers in the old community are feeling. They've been through hell to get where we are today. And many of them have been very concerned about, are we really secure? Are we really safe? And now some of their fears are coming back. And I'm concerned for them.
Barbara, you're in Minnesota, one of 22 states with protections that ban discrimination against LGBTQ people in employment, housing, and public accommodations. I wonder if you could give me an example of how one of those protections has helped you in life that somebody living in another state without those protections, who's also trans, doesn't enjoy.
Well, I guess a good example, a number of years ago, I was diagnosed with prostate cancer, and I followed up on that treatment process as a trans woman and was treated well by all the those who came in contact with me. And I know that people in neighboring states, I know of individuals in neighboring states that have had medical problems and challenges that have face discrimination and have had to go elsewhere out of the state to try and get help for their concerns.
Yeah. Kiara, I want to bring you in now. As you listen to Barbara, you know, the work of the National LGBTQ Task Force, which has been around now for 50 years, as we said in the outset, has helped to bring about some of these rights in states like Minnesota. But I wonder, as you listen to her, what your reaction is in hearing that there's still, it sounds like, so much work to do for people in other states, especially now, given all these anti-LGBTQ bills that have been introduced.
You know, listening to Barbara, and I've had the privilege of being able to be a student of Barbara for some years now, I feel like we are so lucky right now that we have a generation of elders who are out, right, LGBTQ, right, folks in the community. That is something we don't talk about very often, but roots, right, institutional memory, history, perspective of the experiences of folks in our community over these last decades matters, right? It helps us create culture. It helps remind us that these hard times that we're experiencing right now are not new, right? Our predecessors, our aunties, our uncles, our nibblings have been through this before, and we are winning, right? And it doesn't mean that there aren't casualties, right? And along the way, that there aren't people and communities harmed along the way. And things are getting better.
Yeah. And I would love to end with both of you, because you both really, in the face of everything that could be so overwhelming right now, as Barbara started out by saying, and I feel like I'm hearing this from you too, Kiara, it's glass half full. How do you stay motivated and not give up on the hope of achieving true equality? Kiara, let's start with you first, and then last words to Barbara.
Sure. You know, the reality is that there is no human right, there is no civil right that was ever just given to us out of the goodness of somebody else's heart. It took real commitment. It took community power. It took us being together and fighting for it, fighting to win, but also fighting to maintain. And so I see myself as a part of that legacy, and I take it very seriously, and I feel really honored to be a part of it.
Barbara, I would love it if you could speak directly maybe to someone who might be listening, a younger person, who may be able to take a lesson from your life. What would you tell them, maybe something from your own life that will help them go forward?
Well, I would send this both to the young and to the old, because I know that there are many older LGBT people who are also feeling threatened again in their lives. This has been a part of who we are. These threats have been there all our living lives, but most of us have found ways in which we can live fully and authentically as to who we are. Find the places in your community where there is support. Seek it out. Don't hide in your room. Don't isolate. This is the time to be out and about. Do it wisely and protectively, but be a presence. I'll have to remind people of a comment that was made by a former board member and staff member of the task force, Rodney McKenzie, who said, you know, our silence is killing us. We need to tell our stories. And I believe that we need to be, at this time, we need to be out even more so than we've been in the past to let people know how good and strong and powerful we are as a community.
Barbara Satin, longtime faith leader and LGBTQ activist, and Kiara Johnson, executive director of the National LGBTQ Task Force. Thank you both so much for joining us.
Thanks for the opportunity.
Thank you.
Coming up, Kathy Gunst is back, and this time she's brought some fresh recipes to elevate your spring brunch menus. Now, it's no secret to members of the Here and Now team that I'm not a fan of brunch. My dislike is so infamous that the sheer mention of the meal has everyone looking my way and rolling their eyes in meetings. But even as a brunch skeptic, I found myself salivating over Kathy's recipe for lemon ricotta pancakes that she shared with Scott Tong and Deepa. You'll hear what all the fuss is about after the break.
Okay, Deepa, let's talk spring and food. On my list of what I want to eat soon is these chili peppers my son is growing and stick them in cornbread. Ooh. What's on your list?
I want some chili pepper cornbread, Scott. Yeah. But on my list, honey. Scott, honey. In the Indian Ayurvedic tradition, you know, we use foods to help with health conditions. And spring for me and many in my family means allergies. So honey is a great calmer for all that respiratory stuff.
Well. Just stop calling me honey and we'll be all good. Here now, resident chef Kathy Gunst is joining us now to talk about spring and brunch. Kathy, welcome back.
Thank you. I love chilies and honey. Put them together.
There you go.
So, Kathy, this is a bit of a surprise because we hear you're not usually a fan of brunch.
Yeah, I know that's not a very popular sentiment. I mean, I drive around cities and see people lined up to get into places to eat brunch. And in the spring, particularly, I'm planting a garden. I like to get up, have some coffee, get going. But I really realized that the whole point of brunch is kind of to indulge and kick back and kind of take care of ourselves and feed our souls and our relationships. Sorry, don't mean to get too woo-woo there, but just to slow it down in the morning is a great idea.
Yeah. I should tell you, Kathy, our Here and Now staff is highly divided on the topic of brunch, at least whether to go to restaurants, pricey restaurants for brunch. But you, of course, have recipes at home, starting with fancy eggs. So take it away. Tell us.
Yeah. Okay, these I am passionate about. You fry eggs in olive oil, which is a great idea. But what you do is you put some oil in the skillet and you spoon it over the egg as it fries. Ooh. You tilt the pan so that you're getting these crispy, lacy edges around the outside, intact, beautiful zest. But that's just the beginning. You then take chickpeas straight from a can, drain them, rinse them, drain them, put them in a hot roasting pan with wonderful spices like turmeric and paprika and salt and pepper and chilies. Let those roast until they're almost crackly crisp, and then you steam some asparagus. So here's what your plate looks like. You've got asparagus, you've got your olive oil fried eggs, you've sprinkled the whole thing with these spiced chickpeas, then you add a dollop of Greek yogurt if you like, and then you take a baguette and brown that in olive oil. Beauty. You don't need to go out to an expensive brunch. Yeah, right there.
Right there. We can just end right there and we can all go away and make this. But I have a key question, Kathy. Fried eggs runny or not so much?
Totally up to everybody. I like a very intact white and a slightly running yolk. I like to cut into the egg and have that gorgeous yellow just ooze out.
Okay, Kathy, you have a next recipe for pancakes, a brunch evergreen, I guess. How do you tweak pancakes for the season?
Well, for spring, you want bright, fresh flavors. So in this case, these pancakes are creamy with ricotta cheese and then very bright with lemon zest and lemon juice. And the batter sits for only about 15 minutes. And these are truly light, fluffy pancakes, little maple syrup, some fresh spring berries, crisp bacon, if that's the way you like to go, and a lot of good coffee. And you are all set.
I am so hungry right now, Kathy. So sticking on the lemon theme, your last recipe is for biscuits with a lemon cream cheese filling.
Yeah. So biscuits, people think, oh, that's really hard to make. But I'm here to tell you, no, this is a foolproof foolproof recipe. You mix some flour, baking powder, baking soda, work some butter in, and then buttermilk. And if you don't have buttermilk, you just mix a little fresh lemon juice with regular milk and let it sit, and it will start to curdle. And then the biscuits are baked in a cast iron or a heavy skillet, really up against each other, and they puff up and brown on the bottom. While they're baking, you just mix some cream cheese, lemon zest, chives, scallions, and then you serve it with smoked salmon, thin slices of cucumber, capers, onion. It's almost like the biscuit is a bagel.
Yeah, yeah. Wow. Well, I want to ask you, Kathy, about process here. Some listeners, including me, might think, okay, can I take a shortcut on the biscuits and buy something kind of pre-prepared at the store? You mentioned you can get chickpeas out of a can. How do you think about where we can take a little shortcut to get what we want in the end?
I'm always big on shortcuts. I mean, if it gets you sitting at a table with people you love, buy some pre-made biscuits. No judgment there. The idea is that you're going to sit down and have some time together. You're all set, Scott.
All right. Well, I'm feeling a lot better about this brunch thing right now. We've been talking spring brunch with Here and Now resident chef Kathy Gunst. And as usual, we'll have all Kathy's recipes at hereandnow.org. Kathy, thank you.
Thank you both.
This podcast comes from the team behind Here and Now, from NPR and WBUR Boston. As always, there's so much more to read and listen to at our website, hereandnow.org. New today, the hosts of NPR's Alt Latino share some new songs for you to add to all of your spring playlists.
Spring kind of gets me in like a happy, indie kind of mood, if you will. So I love kind of returning to artists that have a really sweet sound like that. I didn't bring in a track from them today, but In La Bamba is a wonderful band that has a record coming out soon. And they have this one song, Ojos del Sol, that I think I come back to every single spring because it embodies spring and sunshine to me.
Today's stories were produced by Ashley Locke, Emiko Tamagawa, and Catherine Swartz. Todd Munt, Gabe Bullard, Kat Welch, and Peter O'Dowd edited today's show. Technical direction from Caleb Green and Mike Mosquito. Theme music by Mike, Max Liebman, and Chris Bentley. Our digital producers are Grace Griffin and Allison Hagen. And the executive producer of Here and Now is Carlene Watson. Thanks for listening. See you tomorrow.